KALW.
The policy is called the Remain in Mexico policy because asylum seekers don't get to live in the U.S. anymore while they wait for their day in court.
A San Francisco-based court might block one of the Trump administration's signature immigration policies.
The U.S. has returned between 50 and 70,000 asylum seekers to Mexico under this law, including 13,000 children under the age of 18.
We'll hear more about that policy and how the court might rule. Then, what happens when you sing a song with toxic lyrics on repeat for 3 days straight?
Almost like you open up the door of your mind and invite this other thing in that then takes over.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hannah Baba. The Trump administration is expanding a policy that says asylum seekers must remain in Mexico while their cases are decided. It's called Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP, and it means that tens of thousands of asylum seekers are living in makeshift camps in Mexico. Human rights advocates say these camps are unsanitary and dangerous, and they hope that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals will stop the policy in its tracks. The San Francisco-based court is expected to rule on whether or not the policy is constitutional, and it could block the policy with an injunction until further notice. KALW immigration reporter Teresa Katsourilis is here to walk us through this. Hi, Teresa.
Hey, Ben.
So just to begin, we should define exactly what asylum means for immigrants.
Right. Just to review really quickly, the federal government grants asylum to immigrants who've either been persecuted or fear they will be persecuted because of their race, religion, sexuality, or political associations. People fleeing domestic violence and gang violence are also included in this.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexican border right now are from Central America. So we're talking Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
These are three of the most violent countries in the world, and it's important to note that these people have a legal right to seek asylum here.
So how did the process in the United States used to work?
So before the Trump administration started changing it, what would happen was asylum seekers would show up at the border and turn themselves in to U.S. authorities. Then U.S. asylum officers would do something called a credible fear screening. That's when they interview immigrants and decide whether they have good reason to fear returning to their home countries.
Mm-hmm.
If asylum seekers passed this test, then they were released into the U.S. where they awaited for a judge to really rule on their case and process it. And it's important to note that asylum seekers were given the benefit of the doubt in these initial screenings. And that's because U.S. asylum law intentionally sets the bar low for this initial interview.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we don't want anyone to get tortured or murdered. So if there's any chance an asylum seeker could be killed if they're sent back to their home country, officials are supposed to let them stay in the U.S. temporarily while a judge reviews their case.
So how did the Trump administration change this asylum process?
So the Trump administration has rolled out several policies that have really cracked down on the asylum process. And the Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP, is one of them. Some of you guys might actually recognize this policy's previous name. It was nicknamed the Remain in Mexico policy.
Kind of a colloquial name.
Yeah, that's kind of the colloquial name for this policy. And the policy is called the Remain in Mexico policy because that's basically what it does. It says that asylum seekers don't get to live in the U.S. anymore while they wait for their day in court. The policy forces asylum seekers who are trying to cross the U.S.-Mexican border to stay in Mexico while they wait for their hearings. This policy has also really changed that initial interview process I told you about for asylum seekers, the credible fear screening. And it's done that in a couple ways. So before this policy rolled out, asylum seekers had to show that they had credible fear of returning to their home countries. Now they have to also show that they have credible fear of remaining in Mexico while they wait for their hearings. And they also have to offer really concrete proof that staying in Mexico would be dangerous for them.
That concrete proof could obviously be difficult if they're already running for their lives.
Absolutely.
So, Teresa, it really doesn't sound like our system is giving asylum seekers the benefit of the doubt as much anymore.
It's not.
Well, how is this new policy impacting them then?
Well, MPP really kicked into high gear this past summer. And it's having a massive impact. The U.S. has returned between 50 and 70,000 asylum seekers to Mexico under this law.
That's so many.
I know, including 13,000 children under the age of 18. Mm. According to the Department of Homeland Security, and this is a crazy statistic, of the tens of thousands of asylum seekers who've approached the U.S.-Mexico border since this policy went into effect, only 960 of them have been led into the U.S. To wait for their case to move through the court system. So you can see just like how high the bar has been set here in these initial interviews.
Right.
Remember, these are asylum seekers. They say that they're afraid to go back to their home country. So as a result, tens of thousands of these asylum seekers are in makeshift camps on the U.S.-Mexican border, which Human Rights Watch reports are extremely dangerous. Mm. One of the reasons these camps are so dangerous is that no one is running them. The Mexican government isn't running them. The U.S. government isn't running them. The U.N. hasn't stepped in because the Mexican government has to invite them to step in. You know, as just an example of one of these camps, there are about 2,500 people are living in one in Matamoros, Mexico. This camp does not have any regular water. It just has five toilets for 2,500 people. People are constantly sick. One aid worker interviewed by This American Life actually says that she's been to refugee camps in Bangladesh, Iraq. She's been to Syrian refugee camps, and this is the worst camp she has seen in her life. According to the human rights group Human Rights First, over 100 asylum seekers have been kidnapped, raped, or otherwise violently attacked after the U.S. returned them to Mexico. And that's because they're being preyed upon by Mexican cartels.
So despite these reports, the Trump administration is planning to expand this program?
As of last week, MPP was expanded to border crossings in Arizona. It is now implemented in pretty much every border crossing between the U.S. and Mexican border.
Mm. So immigrant advocacy groups are challenging this policy in court in San Francisco right now.
They are. They definitely are. The ACLU and a coalition of advocacy groups are suing the Trump administration over this policy. Critics of MPP argue that the policy is in direct violation of U.S. asylum law. And they're also saying there are some serious due process issues here. As an example, the American Bar Association Commission on Immigration says that only 2% of immigrants have access to an attorney under MPP. The ACLU and this coalition of advocacy groups also have acquired a kind of surprising ally in this fight against this policy. The union that represents U.S. asylum officers actually filed an amicus brief in support of the lawsuit against the policy, because the officers who are enforcing this law, their union says they also think the policy is illegal.
Hmm. This is a court that's got a history of ruling against the Trump administration.
It definitely has that reputation. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has deliberated over many of the Trump administration's most famous immigration policies. To give you an idea of how frequently they do this, they heard oral arguments in two of these policies in the same day, just on Monday. Mm. So they have played a very major role in how these policies are implemented. And it's also temporarily blocked a bunch of Trump's most famous policies. Think the Muslim ban, the asylum ban. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled in favor of both of those Trump policies. They get the final say in the matter. But the Ninth Circuit really slowed them down. And if the Ninth Circuit rules against MPP and upholds the injunction against it, then the Trump administration wouldn't be able to implement it until the Supreme Court has their say.
So, Teresa, from your perspective, how do you think the Ninth Circuit's going to rule in this case?
Well, the Ninth Circuit actually ruled in favor of MPP earlier this year, saying that Mexico seemed committed to keeping these asylum seekers safe. Now, however, the lawsuit is in front of the court again. They heard oral arguments in October. And this time, the Ninth Circuit seems a lot more skeptical of this policy, especially changes to that initial interview process we were talking about.
So what's next on the agenda here?
The Ninth Circuit is expected to issue its ruling very soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Teresa.
Thank you.
Teresa Katsourilis is KALW's immigration reporter. You can get in touch with her at immigration@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hanna Baba. Imagine being asked to sing a song with lyrics that disgust you. Now, what if you had to perform that song nonstop for 3 days? We're about to meet Jules Indelicato, who did just that in this award-winning story from our archives. Last year, they took part in an art project called Romantic Songs of the Patriarchy.
It was a 3-day-long durational performance art piece. It took 30 incredibly talented women and non-binary people. They stationed them with guitars throughout the women's building. And for 8 hours a day, we played songs on repeat that were popular, very well-received songs about love, about loving women, but with incredibly toxic lyrics.
Me down the street like I knew he would, because a guy is a guy wherever he may be. Boys with me, boys, run to his arms the moment he comes home to you. I'm warning you. Well, I'd rather see a dead little girl than to be with another man.
Don't deny your man's desire.
And she'll carelessly cut you and laugh while you're bleeding.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss.
The point of the piece was, as you would listen to these songs that you grew up with, that you really hold dear to yourself and others, you realize just how deeply the subliminal messages of toxicity and violence are woven into our culture.
Stand by your man. Help him to arm the kind to have something warm to come to.
We were each given songs. The songs were not our choice. I got Under My Thumb by the Rolling Stones.
Under my thumb, the girl who once had me down.
My whole demeanor when performing this song was very full of myself and suave and proud that I had tamed this wild beast. The difference in the clothes she wears, it's down to me. The change has come. She's under my thumb. There I was, the first day, first few repetitions.
Under my thumb.
Oh man, my fingers are gonna get tight. Do I have to pee?
Under
a couple
my
more.
Thumb.
A couple after that.
Under my thumb.
I feel my feet firmly on the floor. A couple more.
Head me down.
I feel my
under
voice
my
getting
thumb.
Stronger.
The girl who wants.
A couple more. I'm meditating on one
down.
Tiny shudder.
Yes, it
one
is.
Small inflection that I make at the end of one verse. A couple more after that, and your mind goes completely blank. Almost like you open up the door of your mind and invite this other thing in that then takes over. And you are the art, and you are this song singing out of your body. And at the end of the song, there's this gigantic release that becomes greater and greater with every repetition. And then a breath, and you start again. You stop seeing it in the in the lens of time, and it becomes more of a sculpture or a painting. In the first minute, people would come in, they'd realize what song I'm singing, and excitement would come over their face, like, oh, honey, she's doing the Rolling Stones. Listen. And by the end of the first chorus, I'd see the smile kind of leave. And I'd see them start to fidget. And I'd see their eyes kind of searching to lock onto mine. By the end of the song, many people would just break down. And then afterwards, I would see these people walk away with almost a look of embarrassment or shame on their faces, just this bashful nod of acknowledgement. There was this one very emotional turn where I had really, really gotten into it and really started to feel like I was that person in the song, that toxic, powerful, snide man with no shame. And I'm singing my heart out, very subdued, but very intense. And I look up, and this woman is crouched in the corner, clutching her heart and clutching her mouth with her other hands and just shaking her head and sobbing. And I look up with a sneer and a smile on my face right as I say, she's under my thumb. And at that moment, my throat caught up in my chest and my eyes started welling up, and I look at her and she looks at me, and I realize that some of this is kind of seeping into my body. Some of this pride in some of this, like, snarky toxicity. I just felt so gross. And I look at her on the ground and I see how much she's going through. And then I look up and I realize that there's a little girl in the room and she's watching this whole interaction. And she's been there for the whole song. And I don't see her parents around anywhere. And then I think about her. And I think about all of the songs that she's heard today.
Girl, you'll be your woman soon.
And how she's growing up being shaped by this same stuff. And it kind of just made me really overwhelmed at how deeply hurt we are by pop culture.
Try to domesticate you, but you're an animal. Baby, it's in your nature.
And the way that they try to define us and shape us. And so I wanted to stand up right there and just leave. But I sat back down and I took a breath and I started the song again and again and again, the whole while just thinking about how this is necessary, how this magnifying glass that we're casting on pop culture right now is so necessary in these times.
Under my thumb, the girl
who once had me down under my thumb. The girl who once pushed me around. It's down to me, yes it is. The difference in the clothes she wears down to me. Change has come, she's under my thumb. Ain't it the truth, babe?
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't know me.
That was Jules Indelicato performing the Rolling Stones' Under My Thumb. The song was part of an art project Jules took part in at the Women's Building in San Francisco called Romantic Songs of the Patriarchy. Magnolia McKay produced that story with sound designer Gabe Graben, and they won an award for Best Feature from the Society of Professional Journalists of Northern California. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. West Oakland has a problem with diesel truck pollution.
But when I smell something I can't breathe, I just get teary-eyed because this is not me, but it is me. I have to deal with this and have to work with this.
We'll hear how truck routes are changing. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Now, it's the time in our show when we're going to hear from a local band. This is Shannon Shaw from Oakland. She's performing at Bimbo's in San Francisco tomorrow night. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Quinn, and Joshua Sorodiak. Our engineers include James Rollins and Tarek Foda. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. Before we go, we'll leave you with a My Mixtape from our very own Magnolia McKay. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.
My name is Magnolia McKay, and I'm an independent podcast producer and country singer in San Francisco. My song is Pure by the Cocteau Twins. I use this song as a tool for self-love. The lyrics say things like, I'm not afraid of your anger. What do you need? What do you want? I love you, and I know that we can figure things out. And when I feel like I'm in a hard spot, sometimes I just repeat these lyrics to myself. And I tell myself that I love myself and that even if I'm angry, I can get through this. When I need a cheerleader and there might not be any around, it's like, well, it's going to be me. I'm going to be the cheerleader and I'm going to borrow Liz Fraser's voice for it.